And that is just full of art supplies, just tons and tons of art supplies. There's no miniatures in there, there's nothing else. It's just me with like, oh, that's an interesting twig.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm. Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about a few of our favourite things. I am your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers. Today, we're talking about collectibles. I am multiply excited to be joined by Chris and Grant. As always, we shall introduce ourselves alphabetically, which means, Chris, you are going first. What are your pronouns and what do you do?
I'm Chris, he, him, and I write about elves for a living by making RPGs.
Oh, beautiful. And Grant, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hello, I'm Grant, he, him too. And also I write the same things about elves as Chris. We write about elves together.
Do you want to mention the name of your company?
Yeah, we are two-thirds of Rowan, Rook and Deckard. We are Deckard and Rook. And we've written games such as Heart and Spire and, most importantly, Jason Statham's Big Vacation.
Hell yeah. God, that's so satisfying to say.
Mm. Most importantly, 7 Emmy award-winning Heart. I think that's an important thing.
I suppose so, but you know, at no point is there a back page of Heart, which is Bryan Cranston's big expansion, so...
No, that's very true.
It's true. Right. We shall get on to the actual subject of this episode, which is collectibles and collections. One of you go first and tell me what you collect and how you started doing it. Grant, I know what you collect. I know that they're lovely little soldier boys.
Lovely little soldier boys. I like to go around the nightclubs and the docks and pick up lovely little soldier boys.
Home and lost on shore leave.
Oh, don't worry, I'll take care. If you come in, would you like a blanket and a biscuit? Yes, I collect toy soldiers. Chris, why don't you take the lead on this one, Chris?
All right. Well, we both collect toy soldiers. Which is infuriating to a degree because we both access the hobby of toy soldier collecting in very different ways. Mm. I paint miniatures and mess about with them, and Grant has recently started building his own.
Oh.
Which is the opposite of collecting.
It's the opposite of collecting almost. But we spend thousands of pounds a year on tiny little plastic men for no real reason.
Is it thousands? I guess it is thousands of pounds.
It's thousands, Grant. It's absolutely thousands. It's if not
yeah,
more.
At least maybe like Earth. Yeah, God. Yeah. I haven't thought about it in that way.
Technically, they're for a game.
Yeah. Should we explain what Warhammer is?
Please do. I would love to hear you explain what Warhammer is.
Warhammer is a 1980s satire that got incredibly out of hand.
Full disclosure, we did have a TTRPGs episode in which people explained to me what Warhammer was there as well. I think there was something to do with floating pyramids.
Oh, yep. There's floating pyramids.
That's basically part of it,
If you imagine if a load of 14-year-olds discovered purple prose and rocket launchers at the same time.
Mm.
Ah, yes.
That's basically what it is. It's an incredibly overblown universe. Everything's too big and too masculine and too silly.
And the orcs are mushrooms?
The orcs are fungus, yes.
Yes.
Which is actually kind of interesting. The thing is, there is a lot of really interesting stuff in there. But you have to dig through like 30 years of just people going hog wild with a pen.
The important thing to realise about Warhammer is that it's not a story. It's an offshoot of a company that sells toy soldiers. And so they need to sell as many toy soldiers as possible. And the easiest toy soldiers to sell are called Space Marines, which are also the easiest to paint and, some might argue, the easiest to win with. So an awful lot of the lore, an awful lot of the backstory is about basically the same guy, but with a different hat.
Oh, really?
And sometimes he's from Space Sweden, and sometimes he's from Space Rome.
And sometimes he's evil.
Ooh, half of him is evil. And there's a great deal of fiction about trying to make Space Marines interesting, and they're just not.
They're not, no. They're really not. Like, it started a very long time ago, like in the 80s when it was coming up, like it was genuinely satire.
Mm.
It was actually fairly pointed. Like there's one of the biggest orc is named after Margaret Thatcher.
Really?
His name's, was it Grazkol Mag Urk Thraka?
Gaskol Mag Urk Thraka.
Urk Thraka, there you go, yeah. And there's a lot of parallels buried in there to sort of political scenes at the time. And it's very much been forgotten now for bodybuilding space marines who hurt foreigners.
Oh, dear.
Like, there is, like they were, Games Workshop were really careful to put out a statement saying, like, hey, listen, the Imperium, like the sort of the, you know, the sort of the main fascists in the game, the Imperium is bad. We're not bad. We don't want you to be bad. The Imperium is bad. Okay? Mm. Now here's a 5-minute video of a space marine putting on armor.
I see.
It's like, okay, well, so.
And the space marines are part of the Imperium.
Yes.
Very much so. Yes, they're the
Enforcement wing of the Imperium.
Sexless angels of death.
Oh, no.
Who are fired out of rockets and crash land into planets to murder people with grenade launchers.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about that.
No.
No, you're here to tell me about, like, how you... Okay, so I have seen... You get these little grey...
Sprues.
Yes, and they've got limbs and guns and heads and things in them, and you have to like snap them out and put them together.
Snap!
Oh no! It is a careful and zen process.
Oh,
you need yourself a pair of very precise clippers.
You got a pair of the good ones, Chris. I can see you got those ones. Chris got me a pair like that for my birthday.
You get a very precise pair of flat clippers. And then you carefully shave away all the mold lines and glue them together precisely in the way that you choose, if possible. Some sets don't let you choose.
Coward.
So the yeah. So that, like, especially for me, putting them together is like maintaining a Zen garden.
Mm.
It's getting them all perfect and all smooth and lovely, and then spending far too long painting them, and then just throwing them in a cabinet and never touching them again.
I see them. Are those all ones you've
made?
Yes,
that is. Those are the ones I can fit. The ones behind me are the ones that fit into the cabinet. The rest are just in a box on the floor.
And the ones that like that are nicely painted as well, or the ones which you're proud of.
Yes. Like, I realise that this is technically an audio medium, but my desk is just rammed with just piles of paint and handfuls of tiny plastic grey men that haven't been done yet. It occupies a large part of my world every day.
Mm.
They just sort of sit here. They just
what's that fellow's name, Chris? Chris is holding up a big demon.
Yes, big demon. This is Bellacor.
Bellacor.
A big chaos demon, like a Balrog.
Oh.
Yeah. They started with Balrog and then just sort of extrapolated out from there.
And yeah, when, as I say, hog wild with it, and then you've got your angry space dudes.
Oh yes, I see. Very good.
And they're all very heroic. Wink. but yeah, the whole process is like mainly what I do to not be mad. Like it fills the quiet spaces between when I have thoughts.
Yeah. I have House Flipper for that.
House Flipper's pretty good for that.
Oh,
to be fair.
It's,
and a lot cheaper.
Is that the PC game where you tidy a house?
Yeah, you can break it down or paint it and whatnot.
For April Fool's Day, so usually if you want to demolish a wall, you have a big sledgehammer and you hit the wall with it. But for April Fool's Day, it was a shotgun and you just shot the wall just into pieces.
Firing randomly into people's houses as you wander past.
That's the Warhammer way.
The absolute best thing about House Flipper, though, and it's such a minor thing, I've never really enjoyed screwing in a radiator before.
Mm.
There's something satisfying about getting that bad boy up on the wall.
Yeah, there is.
I exclusively play PC games where you can jump sideways holding two guns, so I don't know what you're talking about.
I see.
My experience of PC games is completely the opposite of yours.
You jump forwards holding one gun?
One gun, yeah.
Weird.
Sometimes backwards. So did you get into this hobby via Warhammer? Like, how did you start making things?
Go on, you want to go first?
Yeah, it's Warhammer for me. Warhammer, that was the first nerdy thing I did, I think. That was my first, that was the first sort of game which I was exposed to. a mate of mine at primary school, he bought me in on it, and he was powerfully strange. And at one point, there's a faction of orcs called Evil Sons, and he said it was pronounced Evil Snuzz. And I said, no, Andy, it's not. We can look it up in the codex. And then he said, you should leave my house. So that was a really strange sort of... That was. I'm glad okay. I moved on from him. But that was sort of my first sort of... He bought me in to it. He was very strange. But I learned about... So the first thing I played is a game called Gorkamorka.
Oh!
And Gorkamorka is... it's like Mad Max, I think. Would you describe it as Mad Max, Chris?
But it entirely just based on Mad Max, yeah.
What if Mad Max was full of orcs and much more stoppy-starty? Because you had to actually play through it. And so you have these sort of big ramshackle trucks and bikes and trikes, and you make all your boys, and they have the weapons on, and they have very small bases, so you can physically jam them on the truck, and then you painstakingly move them around a board, trying to sort of outmaneuver each other. I then sort of got more into it. I started buying more models around the sides and like experimenting and trying to build an army. I do want to say, flash forward 12 years, Chris and I tried to play Gorkamorka against each other in second year of university. Because we didn't have any money. We didn't have thousands of pounds a year money to spend on this hobby. So we clubbed together. We managed to get £10 each to get a box of orcs. And then we went to a charity shop and... I got a Playmobil truck.
You got a Playmobil truck, and I got a Winnie the Pooh
pirate ship with wheels.
And we used those as the vehicles because we were poor. And I'd like to point out that Grant and I have played each other not that many times.
Ten really times the games tops. Five times.
Like ten times. Most of those games were on the floor of my parents' house.
Yeah, and we were at uni together, which is weird.
Yeah, we were at uni together, but like we're talking like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
On the floor of my parents' living room.
Like we happened to be over there for a barbecue and a business meeting at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, using like vases as mountains.
We spend I think part of the reason why we wanted to talk about collecting rather than like wargaming per se is that we don't really do war games. I personally find the whole, like the competitive nature of it pretty stressful and maybe boring. And the war games that I do play are much more collaborative or narrative and just a bit sillier. But what we do is focus on the craft of it, I think, would be how I describe it. So Chris paints. Chris is an excellent painter.
Thank you.
Why didn't you tell us about maybe just the different kinds of paint that you jam onto the boys? Because I only got the one type of paint.
Yeah, that's fair. Like the sort of the standard paint that you use, that you can buy from the companies that make the miniatures, are generally like acrylics. They're just standard,
like nice poster paint.
Yeah, high quality, high pigment, that sort of stuff. But I use oil paints.
Oh wow!
And enamels, because you can blend oil paints and you can water them right down, use them as washes and make them all mucky. And you can get things like chipping medium, which is kind of like hairspray in consistency when you spray it on. And then you put another layer of paint over it, and then it's water activated. So you can scratch off the top layer to reveal the bottom layer. And then you can make, like, you paint the bottom layer as rust and the top layer as the armor, and you can make them all weathered and damaged.
Don't forget the airbrush.
And I have an airbrush to do smooth blends.
Oh, I love this.
And like I have sitting next to me, I have a 5-box chest of drawers, they're called a really useful box. Big bucket things. And that is just full of art supplies. Just tons and tons of art supplies. There's no miniatures in there, nothing else. It's just me with like, oh, that's an interesting twig. I'm going to take that home and I'm going to put it in the oven for 3 hours at 150 degrees to get all the bacteria and water out of it. And then maybe glue it to a base. I've got the perfect miniature. I've got the perfect miniature for this. It'll frame it perfectly.
I haven't thrown away the roll from the inside of a tube of tinfoil for 8 years, and I've used none of them. I have a box full of... Because they're the best kind of cardboard tubes. You see?
They're so sturdy.
Or you
they're
can
so
saw
sturdy.
Them, and they don't break apart. They're great.
A good sawable tube.
Haven't used one of them. They're just in a box in my spare room.
That's a big box of potential,
oh,
my friend.
Oh, baby apps. Yeah, so I want to talk about my application of the way I do it. See, Chris is very much into making beautiful models, and he will
build
them as they come, as they're supposed to look. So, like, there's
as per instructions.
Yeah, and like, and there's generally a nice little instruction manual, and he'll put, and like, Chris will put slot A into tab B, and then make them, and so it looks like dynamically posed, and it looks sensible, and all the proportions are right.
The word you're looking for there is coherent.
Coherent, yes, yes, excellent. It stands up on its own, you know.
And yours are more avant-garde.
You know that kid from Toy Story, Sid? That's how I interact with the hobby.
Oh!
But imagine if Sid sometimes wasn't looking, and just really, really liked religious iconography.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'll put a cross on stuff. I love a bit of religious iconography. I think what if Sid had played some Dark Souls at a formative time? That sort of thing. So I tried to build horrible little guys. I really like horrible little guys. And one of my favorite things about Warhammer specifically, but also any sort of tabletop modeling or any sort of toy soldiers thing, is the human element of it, is the pathetic element of it. So, like, rather than having, like, a huge, big, powerful space marine with eight legs and two plasma fists and a steam pipe coming out of his head, my favorite model that I have is, I'm going to say, he's about 7 millimeters tall. He's called a Snotling, which is not a particularly dramatic name. And he has been able to save up and afford himself a catapult.
Aww.
And he is twanging. He's twanging his catapult or something. Snotlings are the absolute worst troops in any legion, any army. They are absolutely terrible.
If you imagine a scrawny and malnourished goblin.
Stupider.
Much more stupid. They are half the size of goblins. They are designed as these, like, they're something that goblins can boss about.
Mm.
Oh, but I love them.
Oh, they're great. They're gorgeous. I adore them. They're wonderful creatures.
They're also communists.
Oh, excellent.
That's the other thing about them.
That's the other thing about them. They regularly have communist rebellions and union meetings.
Tiny goblin unions. Oh, I love this.
Yes, they're gorgeous.
The leader of the Rebel Grunt Revolutionary Committee was called the Red Gobbo. And the deal is, every time you put the Red Gobbo on the table, you'd roll his stats randomly because he'd been killed previously, and so now he was a new guy.
Especially somebody picking up the hat and coat and putting it on and going, yep, in charge now.
A lot of time for that.
The Dread Pirate Roberts of communism.
Yes,
yeah,
precisely. And I really like making little stories. I watch quite a lot of diorama stuff on YouTube, and like I'll try to make something which is like, I like making people who look scared or people who look like they're trying really hard but not getting it. So like there's a fairly recent game which came out in the last couple of years called Turnip 28.
Oh.
So 28 is the scale. So 28 millimeter is the average height of a human. In the setting, Warhammer operates closer to 32 these days. It used to be 28, but then they made everyone taller so they could fit more stuff on the models. But Turnip 28 is set in this sort of post-apocalyptic Napoleonic warfare zone where everything's mud, everything sucks, it's awful, everyone hates it, and instead of commanders you have a snob who is in charge of two toffs. And each of the toffs is in charge of their own unit of men who they've brought along for the war. And it's all sort of Napoleonic mashed together with medieval. It's never stops raining, there's a mushroom growing out of your face and you don't quite understand what's going on. And everyone's terrible. Like, you hit on a six on a dice. So the odds of you actually doing anything are really slim. And I love that! I mean, that's wonderful! What an army of really, like, feckless incompetence. And I really like...
Grant has this marvellous talent for making a model look pathetic.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you.
Like, not a pathetic model, but making them look like they're trying very hard and just not getting anywhere.
You've both role-played with me. So, you know, that's my favourite kind of NPC.
I do.
That is your jam, yeah.
It's like, I'm terribly sorry. I've had a tremendous burden thrust upon me. I'm largely incompetent. I'm about 40% posher than Grant is. Could you help?
Save me from myself.
I'll give you all the money from my wallet.
I still remember that one NPC in Unbound who had forks for hands.
Johnny Forkhands?
Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy Forkhands,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he was great. He really underlined the tense post-apocalyptic mood I was trying to come up with. There was Johnny Forkhands. There were electric forks which span.
Yeah, they were.
There was a lad who had an oven for a chest. I seem to remember.
Something
must be a
like
nightmare
that.
Around spaghetti. Yeah, got that solved.
Yeah, well, so I really like trying to make human elements in models, and also I really like building unique things. So I consider it a personal failure if I make a model how it's supposed to look, which is very time-consuming and means I don't own an army.
I see.
Sorry. I own several armies, but they're all on the sprues. They're all in different boxes. I have a cupboard. The same way that Chris has art supplies for, like, basing and painting and different kinds of wire and different chewable grades of cork, like, 8 different kinds of moss, some interesting rocks he's found. I have just bins of little arms and skulls and heads, and like I'll leave them around the place.
Like 6-liter bins, they're not small.
And like, I don't think that I'm especially extravagant in the way that I pursue this hobby. I think that of the people who do it, I'm probably on the cheaper end of the spectrum.
Alarmingly frugal.
Mm. But I just like I'll buy a sprue, I'll buy another sprue, and I'm like, I'm gonna make these kiss. I've got these horrible bird people and these witches. What if we made horrible bird witches? And then the trick is you just hold the sprues near to each other for at least a week. You wanna get a handle on how those go together and understand them sort of conceptually.
Yeah, they've got to do some osmosis.
Yeah. And then you give up 3 days in. Which is why Chris has like squads.
Yeah, I have squads and stuff because when I do it, I'm constantly trying to learn how to do something new and like different and complicated painting techniques that I can't do yet. Because there's a lot of, if you want there to be, there's an awful lot of technical stuff you can do.
Oh boy.
Like the thing I'm learning at the moment, which is non-metallic metal, which is if you want to paint gold, you get a gold paint and you paint it on. It's got little flecks of mica or aluminium in it that make it shiny. So to do it without that, you paint the shine. So you paint the shine and the reflections, and there's different kinds of it.
Oh, that sounds very detailed and difficult.
Mm-hmm.
There's really complicated version which is called sky earth non-metallic metal, which is where anything that's facing down reflects the earth back onto it, so has earth tones, and everything that faces up has the reflection of the sky.
Oh my god.
And you paint all that in at 28 to 32 millimeter scale.
Do you have like a magnifying glass?
No, I've got these terrible eyes. Terrible eyes.
You've got a steady hand though, Chris, I'll give you that. And your eyes are better than mine. I can't detect depth. I can't do depth perception because I'm long and short-sighted at the same time in either eye, which means I see everything quite flat. So Chris can like paint an eye. And he can and he puts some paint on the brush, and then he puts the brush on the model, and it goes where he wants it to. Whereas with me, it's kind of like a game of chicken, where I've got the paint on the brush, and I've got the model. I have to sort of move one towards the other until bump. So I've had to use a much looser style. Let's say a perhaps more impressionistic method.
Ah, yes.
Grant's miniatures come out, and I do not mean this negatively in any way. They come out grubby.
Oh, thank you. I try for grubby.
Like he paints them grubby and nasty and covered in mud and bleh. And I do some like that, but also I pride myself on being able to do nice clean shiny boys.
Aww. You actually, Chris, you never said how you got into doing all this painting and collecting all these little men.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so I first started off playing Dungeons and Dragons very, very early. And then I think it was like a couple of years after that, I was in my local pub's car park mucking about as a child, as I was wont to do almost every weekend, thanks to my parents. And I found in the car park a tiny plastic orc from a board game which has just been re-released, actually, called HeroQuest.
Oh, yes.
With the scimitar?
With the little scimitar above his head. Yeah. And I was like, they make models of these? I was so excited.
And that orc turned to you and said, come with me, Christopher. I'll take your adventure beyond your wildest dreams.
I will show you a world of empty wallets. And yeah, so then I spent ages trying to work it out because this was pre-internet. Can't just Google that. Mm. Until I eventually found Games Workshop was a company that also had a shop opposite my father's work at the time. So I would force him to go in and buy me things whenever I had enough pocket money. And thankfully, being wonderfully middle class, he did.
Aww. On that note, I think we're going to go to a break. And welcome back. So something that I've noticed from what both of you have said is that it seems like in collecting your miniatures, you have also got like side collections. So Chris, you've got like little side collections of twigs and stones and things.
Yeah.
And Grant, you've got side collections of little cardboard tubes.
Just in case.
There's a lot of accessories involved.
I see. I see.
And also, like, it's all consuming, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
There has not a day gone past where I haven't at least picked up a model and thought about it. Like, sometimes you can't get near your models and you're like, well, this day isn't as good.
This is starting to sound like a curse.
Oh! Hey, well, look, I don't know.
A bit. It's a little bit of a
curse. Yeah, it's like one of them Rumpelstiltskin curses. Actually, that was quite a big one, wasn't it?
If you can guess Games Workshop's actual name.
That's a fairly solid curse you got going.
That was the firstborn, wasn't it? Yeah. It's a bit cursey. But I think that as young boys, we are told we can't be creative. I can't speak to the experience of young girls. I wasn't one. I don't really know what it's like. But I remember that from the age of about 8 years old, 9 years old, you're pretty much told to shut up and sit down. Mm. Your like creativity is often not punished, but not created. Sorry, but not desired. Like outside of how well it can get you a mark in school, your creativity isn't especially rewarded. There are very few outlets for you to be artistic, to make something beautiful, to make something that you're proud of, and all of the like even a lot of the marketing around Warhammer is around competing against each other and winning and trying to get like the best army so you can fight. And I think something which has really helped Chris and I, because we're also like we are creative in our day jobs. We write role-playing games for a living. And so there's this drive in that, like, role-playing games are often a hobby for a lot of people, and so it's something you can just sort of do laid back and relaxed. You don't need to worry about getting better at it. But we do. We have a. I have a professional pride to uphold, and I want to get better at writing, and I want to, you know, I want my next game to be better than my current game, and so on and so forth. But just making toy soldiers, especially with no sort of like, oh, I'm not here to win a contest. There's no time pressure. Just something we can slowly get better at for no reason other than it's nice to get better at something. That's hugely valuable,
and it's an achievable goal.
Mm.
Like, you can get better each time you try something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just continuing from Grant's point, like the girls I knew when I was very young had craft boxes, right? They had boxes full of glitter and all sorts of other stuff that I was not allowed to because
friendship
I was
bracelets.
A boy. Yeah, stuff like that. And what you end up with is like, you know those face creams for men that are like face armor, bulletproof. This moisturizer will stop a speeding F1 car. That's kind of what Games Workshop and Warhammer 40,000 miniatures are. Like, it's creative, but it's about guns, so it's okay. Boys can play.
It's war.
And at least at that time, especially, it was an in.
Yeah.
And it was a way that was accepted, and I was allowed to do that, as it were. And it kind of stuck. And I'm not upset about that fact, but I would have liked some glitter.
Yeah.
I always thought the charm bracelets were wonderful. I thought they were really cool. Like you get little bracelets and they have little figurines on them, you know?
Yeah. That's another thing that you have to collect. Like, you get the bracelet with like one charm on it, and then you hunt down all the little bits.
Yeah. Where's the Warhammer charm bracelets, Chris?
Just skulls and ammunition.
Just hundreds of skulls. But, like, you know, you could get, like, little symbols. I think it might look quite cute. It's just there's really no market for them, I guess. If only they already sold small resin lumps, which I could attach to a bracelet. Mm.
You can make your own resin lumps.
And he frequently does.
Thanks, Helen.
I believe in you.
So what I've been getting into recently is scratch building, which is the opposite of collecting.
And what's that?
Scratch building is when you just get raw materials and make toy soldiers.
Like a chunk of plastic?
I use putty. So you get epoxy putty. So you get two different kinds of putty of various stickiness, mix them together, and then it hardens over a few hours. But you can sculpt it in that time. And so you build an armature out of wire, and you cav all the sculpting tools. And you do this, and that's also. I mean, Chris does this as well, just in, like, filling in gaps or like for light conversion work. But it is a I am having just the most fun with it. Because I can make uniquely horrible little guys.
Hooray. I'm very happy that you can do that.
It's so hard to buy a model of a fat man with his shirt off, just really tired.
Yeah.
And I can make that for basically nothing. And now I have a bunch of models of like sort of sunbathing dad grade physiques.
I love that. I want more dad bods in general, yeah. Actually.
But one of the nice things as well is that because it's a physical thing you've made, you can chart progress on it.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah.
Because you've behind me, I've got display cabinets, and some of those now, the painting on them, I would look at now and just, I'd strip the paint off immediately. That would be an abject failure for me now.
If I didn't steal it first.
Yeah. But it shows how far I've come in X amount of years. And I know roughly when I painted each one, so I can plot the order of getting better. And you end up with this like little chronology of talent. It's really fun.
How do you feel about being enthusiastic around people about this sort of thing? Because I would get four drinks in and lean over to someone at the party and be like, do you want to see my toy soldiers? And they pretty much always said yes, because I'm quite tall.
Because they have to,
because it's my house. And I'll show you the big robot I made. But how do you feel about sort of like enthusing about this? Obviously, we've been given a safe space to by our good friend Helen.
Yeah, it's literally in the name of the show.
So I don't talk about this stuff to, like, in quotation marks, normal people. Oh. I.e. people that don't...
You're not friends with normal people.
No, but like the friends that share the hobby, understand role-playing games, that sort of, you know, nerds, which most of what I know, fine. I'll talk about all this stuff quite a lot. But I also know a lot of people that aren't nerds.
What's that like?
It's weird. Mm. And I don't... None of this comes up. There's no way to really talk about it. I'm like, what do you do? Oh, I paint them in. Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Wait. I'm going to be over here.
What do they talk about? What do they do? They're so high and mighty. Is it football?
Stocks. I don't know. I don't listen.
Golf?
Golf. It's all golf.
House prices?
I'm still thinking about a Chaos Space Marine I'm going to touch later on.
Like, as we've evidenced from talking here, like, it's actually fairly hard to explain what you do.
Mm.
If I'm really into fixing cars, brilliant.
Mm.
Everybody can pass that. What do you do for a living, Chris? Well, I write games about elves that let you be elves, but you're not actually elves. And also I make tiny men out of plastic. That's such a hard conversation to have with somebody who doesn't already know a little bit of it.
Yeah.
It's when I'm not pretending to be a wizard online.
Yeah.
Which is the other thing you do a lot.
Yes.
I want to ask if either of you have, like, a particular piece that you're looking for. Because, like, I feel like this is the kind of hobby where you can be like, oh, I really want that dragon head to add to my horrible tree person. And then, you know, it seems like the kind of thing where you can mix and match and you're, like, waiting for, like, the perfect thing.
So, interestingly, this collection is not one of scarcity.
Ah.
Well,
To a degree. So now we live in the age of 3D printing.
Yes.
And things can be prohibitively expensive. Like, some of these models are colossal art pieces. Like, there's a enormous robot, and I mean enormous, like multiple feet tall, that is like £3,000.
Oh my God.
Toddler size.
Yeah. It's
like a resin toddler.
Yeah. It's a big robot. But most of the like standard miniatures are fairly accessible. They're fairly cheap. You get a lot of them. But what I'm looking for is a specific style of thing. Because if you want, like, for years, I have been searching for a witch miniature. I like witches. I like the broom. I like the hat. Now, finding a witch miniature that doesn't look like it should be painted on the nose cone of a plane is difficult.
It's so hard.
Yeah, they are all sexy witches.
To find a non-erotic witch.
I see.
But finding, like, a nice witch, cauldron, broom,
cat,
some clothing, would be wonderful.
At least with a top on.
Yeah. And there's an upgraded scale as well. So the scale that we regularly collect in is 32 millimeters. So they're about an inch and a half. There's also 75 millimeter, which is larger, big display pieces not used in games. And those are expensive. They're made by generally small companies, and it's that they are already, before you touch them, works of art.
Hmm.
And there's several of those that I've had my eye on for ages, but they're almost always limited runs.
Hmm.
So they'll make
and they're resin as well. Yeah, they're resin, plastic, so they're more expensive to produce.
They're heavier. They're fragile. And there's a couple of those that I would adore getting my hands on, but if you don't happen to have £150 at the time when it's coming out, then you're looking at eBay.
Mm.
And obviously it gets incredibly expensive very fast for some of the rarer, nicer pieces.
Well, Grant, can you not make a witch with your putty and wire?
Yeah, but it would come out a bit lumpy.
Like
that's the thing. As Chris said, all of my guys are quite grimy and lumpy, and like I'm going for that. But also, it's easier than making them not grimy and lumpy.
I don't know. I can vibe with a grimy, lumpy witch.
Yeah, again, and I'm happy to make a grimy. I think I've probably got a couple knocking around my desk as we stand. But what Chris wants is a nice looking, a respectable, librarian-esque witch. I think, is that right,
oh,
Chris?
Okay.
Yeah, like, just not sexy witch.
Yeah, busty, but not, like, sexy.
I mean, I'm not going to turn that down. But
buxom?
But not a pin-up.
Yeah, and like I have... There is perhaps a difficulty of me making a beautiful witch for my friend Chris. That seems like the sort of thing that, like, two ancient perverts would do in a Greek myth. My particular thing, which I am looking for, it's not a... I started playing back in 96, 97, and...
Oh, wow.
Back then... He's still involved now, but, like, the Games Workshop's head rock star designer for models, as far as a guy who makes orcs for a living can be a rock star, was a chap called Brian Nelson. And Brian Nelson just made the most characterful off-model miniatures. It's like, you know how like you'll see like pictures on Twitter and it'll be like, oh, here are times the Simpsons went off-model and when Homer looks like really odd and janky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brian Nelson didn't quite subscribe to the same guidelines aesthetic as everyone else. So his guys were weird and lumpy and ugly and characterful and like orcs, which didn't look like the other orcs. But I thought they were absolutely beautiful. He made the Snotling, which I was chatting about earlier, which I'm so proud Aww. Of. Proud that I am. But he has basically anything that he put out in the second half of the 90s, I would gladly have, but you're looking at like £25 a piece at this point. Oof. And it's just not worth it because they're made out of soft metal and the metal itself degrades. But just like his style was absolutely beautiful. And I'd like, there are some pieces which I would like to have just for the sake of being able to have them around. I probably wouldn't even cut them up, if you can imagine such a thing. I probably wouldn't paint them though.
They do all have the most twisted faces.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah. And like they're all having such a bad day.
Yeah, it's like they learned how to do faces around the year 2000.
Yeah.
And anything before that is just guesswork. It's an armor plate with a nose.
Not pretty before then. There's not a lot of great stuff. Like some are like Trish Morrison's Greater Demons, if I can get real inside baseball.
Like, I'm gonna Google that.
For me personally, Trish Morrison defined what a Minotaur should look like, and they haven't bettered it since. like her yeah, Lord of Tombs.
The old mages have their own weird aesthetic.
But I will say, the ones you can get now are better because they stick together properly and they're lighter. And you can like the problem with metal models is that they don't really stick together. You have to drill a hole in every joint and then put a bit of wire in and then glue that wire in. Otherwise, if you so much as like breathe on one of these things, all the paint comes off as well as three of the arms.
Oh no.
Because they're made out of this incredibly soft, like pewter metal. And it means that if they've got like a sword that you've beautifully painted, and then you accidentally bend that sword by, I don't know, touching it, the paint just flakes off. Just
quick question for you, Chris. Quick question for you. How long did the sword last on your A&R, the Sword of Twilight?
The Sword of... Oh, like...
Yeah.
Minutes.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was infuriating. Such a gorgeous model.
They gave it away free like with White Dwarf as well.
It was... Yeah, they used to give it... It was a limited edition thing they gave away.
A deliberately sexy elf.
Just, basically just melted.
Oh.
He was a gorgeous thing.
And that was Brian Nelson. He did more time. Oh, yep. Oh, they knew how to make weird perverts in Mordheim. Most of them are carrying fishes.
Oh. Back in my day.
Oh. Everyone looked like Alan Moore. It was great.
F's in chat for that sword. We're coming towards the end of the episode. I want to ask a kind of broader question, perhaps a philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if either of you have any thoughts on why people collect things, because it seems to be the kind of thing that doesn't stop, if that makes sense. Like, there isn't a final end point or goal. It's just
and if you're collecting, let's say, a sticker album, right, that has a technical final end, you also find people finish that and go, well, I'll get another one.
Yes.
And it's almost always in the same vein, so they'll get all of the coins from one year. And then they'll just do the next year.
I want two copies of every Super Nintendo game, one to play and one to put on my shelf.
Yeah, one to vacuum seal. And I think, honestly, for a lot of people, it's community.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Because, just to use an example, as Grant just mentioned, Trish Morrison's Greater Demons. That doesn't make any sense to anybody.
Not even to you.
Except... Yeah. Barely to me. Even I know the Greater Demons, but not the Trish Morrison. I can't say. But that incredible deep dive, that incredible specific knowledge, is a part of a community, and there are people who will get that reference and understand it, and agree or disagree, and have a reason for both of those. And you've got dialogue, and that's what it is. It's that community. It's about showing off your work. It's about improving and getting feedback in a lot of cases.
I have a counterpoint. Well, sorry, not a counterpoint. I agree with you entirely, Chris.
You're wrong because of this.
No, I think you're entirely right. And I think that part of like something which we've learned as RPG designers, part of a game's commercial success comes down to how much a community you can build around it. And part of how much community you can build around it is giving them enough setting to get excited about, but not so much that they get scared. It's a strange balancing act, but it's worthwhile. For me, I think the older I've got, the more I start saying dad things. And one thing that has fully penetrated even my life with strangers. I said to my therapist on Friday, so instead of saying goodbye or see you later, I'll say lasers, which is short for see you laser, which doesn't make any sense. Nothing. It's an absolute just a fart of a thing. But it is a ritual that I have prepared. It is a ritual which lets me form a little sense of understanding through the world. And similarly, dad jokes are oft repeated because in this nightmarish, chaotic world, they are an element of control and understanding. And so you're not setting yourself the goal to try and collect one of everything, or I want to get one of every SNES game, although some people do that. It's more, I want to understand this. I want to understand this tiny little part of the world, because it is a ceaseless cacophony outside of this. It cannot be understood. Any attempt to understand it is foolish at best. And so by really restricting ourselves to this and saying, like, right, here are the things I'm interested in, and that means that I can have a discussion about why Trish Morrison's Minotaurs are better than the plastic ones that replaced them, and feel as though I understand the boundaries of that. And there's a safety, and there's an element of like, right, well, around in these walls, this bit makes sense. I've plotted out this bit. And that, I think, is a huge amount of collecting and ordering things. It's an extension of naming everything in the universe.
And from that, like, there's an element of mastery and identity as well. Like, I am good at this thing. This is a thing I am good at, and you can reference it. And people can say, oh, that's Grant. He makes miniatures. And you go, yes, I do. I am very good at it. Thank you. And that mastery and identity is a lot of why we do it.
That's really beautiful. And you know what? I'm very glad that it's the end of the episode. That was such a thoughtful and lovely thing for you both to have said. Thank you. This has been lovely. And I really like that you two already know each other and bounce off each other, because I've had to do basically nothing this whole episode. I've just been like, tell me about this thing. And it's been great.
I'll be honest with you, Helen. This is broadly just similar to what we do most days. except we happen to be recording it for someone else.
Yeah, it's not far off.
Thank you both so, so much for coming on. I'm so glad that we could get you on and talk about something that you both enjoy so much. So, listener, I will see you in the next episode. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from these two. Do you both want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Bye.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 international license. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Lurie Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing, Tessa Vroom, Michelle Snow, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.